It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
And good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We're going to receive an update from the state capitol in Sacramento on this weekend show from District 9 Republican Assemblyman Heath Flora. He represents a portion of Calaveras County, also Oakdale, LaGrange, and many surrounding valley communities. Assemblyman Flora, it's great to have you on Motherlode Views today.
It's great to be on with you. Thanks for the invitation.
So for anyone unfamiliar with you, can you fill us in on your background and what you did prior to joining the assembly?
Absolutely. So I was born and raised in the west side of Modesto out in the Wood Colony area and to an ag family. Born and raised in the Ammon industry. During high school, really got into public safety. Started out as a volunteer firefighter with Slida Fire Department and then got hired with Cal Fire in 2005 and worked out of Valley Springs and San Andreas. Then went to paramedic school in 2015. A good friend of mine was Senator Canella, who decided that I would be a good candidate to run for office, and away we went. But if you'd have told me a decade ago that politics is what I'd be doing with my life, I'd say, you're out of your mind. This is not what I thought I'd be doing. But it's been a lot of fun and certainly enjoyable to represent, you know, our area, and then certainly, you know, representing the new, you know, 9th Assembly District. So it's a great honor.
Yeah, life definitely takes you down unexpected paths sometimes. So Assembly District 9, I mentioned it a little bit, but where exactly does it all cover?
So it's got five different counties, portions of five different counties, starting in Modesto, north side of Modesto, and then covers a little bit of Calaveras, San Joaquin, Stanislaus, and then up into Sacramento County, like Highway 50 and Bradshaw up in Sacramento County.
And then, so where do things stand right now as we sit and talk here about the current legislative session when it comes to reviewing and voting on bills?
So we had House of Origin deadline last week, which any bills that started in the assembly had to be passed out of the assembly and off their floor, and then they come over to our side of the House, and then any bills starting the assembly, you know, head over there to the Senate. So House of Origin deadline is passed, and now, you know, we're looking through all the Senate bills. So we have really till July 1st, and then we take a break until August 1st. So the month of July we have off, and then from August through September is just a lot of time spent on the floor and in committees going through bills. I think there's about 2,100 new pieces of legislation that we'll have looked at by then, and that just takes a lot of time and a lot of energy. So House of Origin deadline is passed, and now we're just looking to the end of session.
So what are some of the types of bills that you've introduced this legislative session, and how have they fared so far?
I think the big one that we're running right now, obviously my background is a firefighter. For a long time, Cal Fire has been significantly underpaid, and a lot of people view the state as somewhat of a transition agency or a beginning agency and then move into, you know, local government. So what we introduced this year was a pay equity bill for state firefighters, basically taking 15 different cities up and down the state and making sure that Cal Fire is paid within 15% of those agencies. So I'm very excited about that bill. It has gotten off the assembly floor, and it's over on the Senate side. And I think there's a lot of encouraging signs over there. You know, our men and women that fight these vegetation fires on a yearly basis, and those fire seasons are becoming longer and hotter and drier, and they need to get paid. They need to get paid properly. And I want to make it to where people could spend a career with the state and be compensated for that.
Yeah, I'm curious, too, your observations with a fire background. You mentioned the pay equity issue. Are there other things right now at a statewide level that you think could be done either short or long term when it comes to making California more resilient to those big mega fires?
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the biggest frustrations that I have since I've been elected is just our ignorance as it relates to vegetation management. You know, a lot of my colleagues, primarily, and I'll be very honest, I'm not a particularly partisan guy, but a lot of our Democratic colleagues that come from the more urban, you know, centers don't have the knowledge and don't understand that there's three things that sustain fire. It's oxygen, ignition, and fuel. And the only thing that we can really control is the fuel load. And we do absolutely nothing with vegetation management. And it's frustrating. The environmental justice community, the Sierra Club, and you know, groups like that have done a great disservice in not allowing us to go thin the forest like we know we need to. For centuries, you know, the Native Americans have understood that thinning the forest, you know, was a way to protect themselves. And when you look at, you know, a lot of people that went through wildfires, a few years later, the forest system is incredibly healthy if it's not real intense. You know, you get a lot of new growth. And we just don't do anything like that. And so that is probably my biggest frustration is we can throw as much firepower as we want at a wildfire. And the state does. And they do an incredible job at suppression. But until we get a control on our vegetation management, we're just going to be, you know, chasing our tail.
You know, being a Republican in a more Democratic state, is it difficult to get your voice out there sometimes on some of these issues?
You know, it's not. I've had very good luck being very collegial. You know, I kind of understand the game in a lot of ways. Politicians, I'm nothing more than an elected salesman. And, you know, my job is to buy and sell an ideology that represents my constituents. And I can't do that if I'm a jerk. I can't do that if I'm making enemies. So when you understand the philosophy and understand that we're dealing with human beings and you come at it from a perspective of collegiality, not really caring what letter is behind somebody's name, but are they a good person and can I work with them? You can get things done. And throughout my career, you know, I've been very, very fortunate and blessed to have a lot of good Democratic colleagues that I work with and that I call friends. And that does not mean we agree on everything. But there is a right and a wrong way to be civil in politics. And I think sometimes we forget that. I think at the national level, sometimes they forget that. But I am proud of the state and kind of how we do business.
So stepping away from just the legislation that you're directly involved with, what's kind of your observation about some of the you mentioned the deadline, you know, bills that are making their way this legislative session and maybe some that you're happy that didn't make their way through so far this legislative session?
There's been a lot of bills that are pretty rough. A lot of them affect public safety. One bill that I'm happy that did not pass or did get out of our house was a bill that would ban, you know, canine dogs from law enforcement, would not allow canines to be used, the cops to use those anymore. That bill got out of committee and, you know, made it, well, actually never was brought up on the floor. They never had the votes. We were able to, you know, keep everybody off of that and kill that bill on the floor. And then there's another bill, you know, that has to deal with parents' rights. And, you know, it has to deal with, you know, the transgender community and parental rights. And I think some of those bills, like, we need to keep a very close eye on them. You know, I'm a father, got two little girls, and I think for some reason the state is really starting to pass legislation that erodes parental rights, and I'm very, very concerned about that on a lot of different issues.
We need to take a quick break. We're talking with Assemblyman Heath Flora. He represents the 9th District in the California Assembly. He's joining us on this weekend's Motherlode Views. He represents portions of Copperopolis, Oakdale, LaGrange, many surrounding valley communities. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. We'll have our second segment coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area. For family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service, call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
Welcome back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host, getting an update on issues of the state capitol in Sacramento. Pleased to be joined on the telephone by District 9 Republican Assemblyman Heath Flora, who represents many communities in the region. Assemblyman Flora, next thing I want to ask you about is CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act. Governor Gavin Newsom recently made some statements that he would like to see some CEQA reforms in the final years of his term in office. I'm curious your reaction to hearing that and just your thoughts on CEQA in general.
No, absolutely. CEQA in general, we'll start there. I think it was based in a good thought process of, you know, obviously as we continue to build out and create things and our society grows, to do that in a mindful way that, you know, protects the environment as best we can. With that being said, CEQA has turned into an absolute disaster for the state of California. It has been weaponized by private attorneys, environmental groups, to basically stop anything that they feel they want to stop. So I have major concerns in Republicans since I've been here, and really throughout the last decade or so, have tried to run legislation for CEQA reform, and it can never get passed. The only thing that we can really get CEQA reform passed on is sports stadiums, whether it was the LA, the Clippers, the Clippers, the Rams came down in LA, you know, we passed legislation to exempt them. But that's really the only thing we can do. And so to hear the governor talk about that, I absolutely think it's a good idea. I think it is needs to be relooked at. I do sort of question, you know, what the governor actually wants to do. He hasn't really laid out a ton of particulars, a ton of details. But Governor Newsom tends to speak in platitudes, and when it gets right down to the nuts and bolts, it's very, very hard to kind of pinpoint what he wants done. But when he says CEQA reform, that perks a lot of people's attention. So I do. I'm encouraged by that, but I would like to see the details. As we all know, that's usually where the devil lies.
Are you optimistic that it could also move into discussions about housing and CEQA reforms?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's what the governor is really wanting it to do. And a lot of the, you know, NIMBYs and some of the NGO groups that do not want housing in their backyard or low income, they use that. A lot of people use CEQA and weaponize it. So I think the governor is getting frustrated with that, because he is mandating some very, very substantial housing goals on to local governments. And if they can't get projects passed, I mean, the government, local government can approve a project all day long, and then it can get tied up in litigation. And it's really no fault of their own. So I think the governor is seeing where it is being weaponized. And it's something we've been saying for a long time. So, yeah, I think housing is a huge part of his push.
Anything else that you see that's kind of slowing housing growth in the state of California that the state legislature could take a look at?
I mean, CEQA is a big one. And then just really local governments. Yeah, I mean, this is what, like, Rob Bonta, the attorney general, and the governor have been really hammering, you know, communities on, which I don't particularly agree with. I don't think a top-down approach is the right way to do it. I didn't agree with the governor's housing, you know, mandates anyways. But just before COVID, there was a huge push, what I call like stack and pack, right? They just wanted mass, you know, housing around mass transit. And then COVID happened, and then everybody wanted to move into the country, move into the 9th Assembly District, move into the, you know, the 22nd Assembly District out into the valley. And so it really kind of put them on their heels, where this idea that we were just going to stack and pack everybody around mass transit kind of went away. And so, you know, there's a lot of communities. There's like, hold on a second. We don't want everybody from the Bay Area coming in, moving in. Like, this is where our family lives, and they're getting priced out of it. So there's this reluctance from local governments to kind of buy into this as well. They need to protect their own community and the community members, but they're not too excited about continuing to build so other people can move in that came from a more urban setting, and a lot of times have different political beliefs.
You know, changing the topic a little bit to water, we talked about the drought for several years, and we had the big winter, and it seems like discussion in the public has maybe lessened a little bit. Is there still kind of a push in Sacramento to get some water supply projects going?
There is. Once again, CEQA is a huge problem with water supply. You know, in 2014, we passed Prop 1 and 2 to build, you know, storage. And we haven't been able to do any of that yet. We haven't built a dam or storage in the state since, I think, 74 was the last time. And our population has doubled since then, and we're running off the same infrastructure. So it's absolutely asinine that we think that we have enough water, and we think that we can, you know, they're keep passing legislation where, you know, conservation is the key, and conservation is the conservation. And though that might be a great idea and something we need to think about, if we don't capture the water that we have on wet years, then we're being idiots. We're not being honest with ourselves of what our actual issues are. So I really, this last year, the governor on energy, when he reauthorized the nuclear power plant down south, you know, we worked with him to try to cut through some of the bureaucratic red tape and get Sites Reservoir finally built. And that was a huge win for Republicans, because he committed to doing so. And I do think in the next number of years, we'll probably see movement on Sites Reservoir. and get that built. So I am encouraged by that. But as far as any other distribution or, you know, conveyance projects, no, I really don't. I mean, there's, when we start talking about conveyance, the only thing anybody really agrees on is storage. But when you talk conveyance, whether it's a new canal system or tunnels or whatever it may be, a lot of people get worked up very, very quickly. So I think for right now, I would be excited for storage, and then we can talk about conveyance once we get the storage done.
You know, District 9 has a lot of ag land. You know, what kind of type of concerns do you hear from ag leaders when it comes to state of California policies?
From CARB and the regulatory burdens on air quality, banning the pesticides that we've tend to use for a very, very long time. I think the ag community has been sort of, I don't want to say public enemy number one, but certainly within a few committees it has been. We have not done a good job. And I'm speaking from ag guy, like one of the reasons I got elected was to kind of represent ag and educate my colleagues on who agriculture is. Because in my opinion, ag is some of the greatest environmentalists there are. You know, my great-grandparents homesteaded in the 20s. We still farm that same ground today. And if we would have done anything to screw that up then, it wouldn't have been productive for us. So I get frustrated that, you know, my Dem colleagues, quite frankly, don't understand that. And then also with the ag community, we haven't done a good job of representing ourselves. You know, we tend to kind of be out of sight, out of mind, and let government just do what they're going to do. But the truth of the matter is, like, government's going to either regulate or legislate on you. And if you're not part of the solution or part of the conversation, then you're just going to be on the menu. And I can promise you, if you allow politicians to create your narrative, they will get it wrong. And so I'm very encouraged over the last few years, the Almond Alliance, the Farm Bureau, the Cattlemen, the Dairy Association, like, they have all really stepped up and started engaging with their membership, and it's really changing the narrative. So it's very encouraging.
You know, the economy in general right now in District 9, you know, how do you feel it's faring, and are there things that the state could do to help specifically your district?
I think we are. I mean, we're resilient. When you have a largely ag and manufacturing-based, you know, economy, you tend to, the fall tends to be a little bit slower. You know, as far as what the state can do to help, it's just, quite frankly, get out of the way. Allow us to do our jobs. Like, for, you know, when we reached the cap and trade, for instance, there was a mandate that, you know, we had to reduce X amount of CO2 emissions. And so we created this program, the engine replacement program, and it allowed farmers to trade in tractors and get newer equipment for really 60 cents on the dollar, plus or minus a little bit, depending on where you're at. But that's been one of the most successful programs CARB has ever implemented because the ag community bought into it. And so I've been just for a long time, like, talking to these agencies, like, engage with ag, engage with us. I won't necessarily argue your goals, but help us help you get there. Like, use the carrot versus the stick approach. Ag is willing to make changes, but just quit hammering us and make us partners instead of, you know, adversaries.
Need to take one more break. We're talking with Assemblyman Heath Flora on this weekend's Motherload Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherload Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Our final segment is coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And we welcome you back to Motherload Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host, joined by Republican Heath Flora. He represents the 9th Assembly District at the state capitol in Sacramento. Assemblyman Flora, one topic we haven't gotten into much is drugs. And I'm specifically curious your thoughts on fentanyl, because that's been a recent discussion at the state capitol.
Yes, fentanyl has been a huge discussion. And fentanyl is probably one of the more interesting and frustrating subjects that we've dealt with since my time in Sacramento. You know, it is remarkable when we kill roughly, you know, 300 and some kids a month in the state of California. Well, actually, that's, yeah, in the state of California with fentanyl overdoses. And I want to be very, very clear about this too. When we talk about fentanyl, a lot of people use overdose. And that is wrong. Fentanyl, these kids are not overdosing. These kids are getting poisoned. You know, when you have a high schooler or a teenager studying for a test and they get a pill, you know, whether it's from a buddy with anxiety or trying to stay awake, and then they go to bed and they never wake up, that's not an overdose. That's a killing. And for so many of us that have authored fentanyl legislation, you know, Assembly Member Joe Patterson is kind of one of the folks that's leading the charge on that. And when we hear our Dem colleagues just dismiss it on the premise of they don't want to put anybody else in jail, they do not want to create a new war on drugs because they view that the war on drugs failed. And we just end up putting a bunch of, you know, individuals in jail for no reason or for minimal, you know, offenses. It's really disheartening that really nothing has been done. Anything with any type of penalty enhancements or any type of consequences just dies immediately. Republicans have not let that go. We have forced bills to the floor. One of my jobs is the Republican floor leader, which means I'm the number two Republican in our caucus. And I work with the Dems, but I can make procedural motions and force legislation to the floor for a vote. And it really irritates my colleagues because it gets them up to vote. I mean, they have to vote no on fentanyl. And a lot of them don't want to, but a lot of them fall in line because they don't have the courage to stand up to Dem leadership. And when you really have one individual, and it's the chairman of Public Safety Committee, that is stopping this legislation, it's disheartening. It really, really is sad because we are losing hundreds of kids a month for something that we don't want to deal with because we are too scared of putting anybody in jail. And when most of the fentanyl is coming, the top three, you know, importers of fentanyl into this country is China, India, and Mexico. And we don't want to do anything to deal with the cartels. We don't want to have anything to deal with any of these folks that are smuggling this poison into our system. There's not a word that's strong enough to kind of express my frustration with it. It's just disheartening that, and it should not be bipartisan. Or it should not be partisan, actually. It should be something that we should all be able to agree on. But anything that I have seen that puts any type of consequences on people, they will not pass out of public safety. And right now, fentanyl just continues to be what it is, and we're going to keep hammering them on it. And hopefully at some point they will get tired of taking phone calls asking why you haven't done anything, and we can actually get something moved forward.
So you're hoping public pressure may eventually change that course?
It has to. I mean, one thing politicians are scared to move stuff is constituents, right? And you'd be surprised about how many elected up here, primarily, you know, coming out of the more urban settings, don't really like to deal with constituents. It makes it hard on them because then they have to, like, balance, like, the Dem agenda versus what their constituents want. And if our constituents, if Californians call a capital and demand action and make it uncomfortable and just really force us to do something, that would be very helpful. It really would, if people would stay engaged on this issue. Because if the community decides to go quiet or not fight it, then it just is out of sight, out of mind. And, you know, that's just kind of how Sacramento works.
So,
yes, I would encourage everybody to keep calling and keep pressure on elected officials to do something with fentanyl. Absolutely.
So raising penalties has been stalling so far. Has there been any compromise yet between the Democrats and Republicans on anything fentanyl related?
Not really. Carlos V. DePoodle out of Stockton, who is a good Dem colleague, a dear friend, you know, he got a bill passed that put some enhancements if he had a kilo of fentanyl. But keep in mind, a kilo of fentanyl is enough to kill, I think it's like 250,000 people. It's an absurd amount of fentanyl. And when you talk about fentanyl, I mean, a grain the size of a piece of lead on a number two pencil, the tip of a number two pencil, that's all it takes is to kill you. And so when you talk about a kilo, that's just a ridiculous amount. And so I guess to be fair, yeah, they got that one bill passed, which is sort of laughable to us.
Interesting.
And that was, I mean, his point on that was to go after the cartels. you know, to try to get some of the big fish and not the street level vendors. And to us on the Republican side, you know, and we think that's a good start, but I'm sorry, if you're on a street corner dealing fentanyl-laced Adderall to high school, you know, college kids, there should be consequences for that.
You know, fentanyl's been kind of one of those high-profile issues. Just crime in general, how do you feel your district is faring right now?
You know, our district, I think, is okay, is better than most, to be honest with you. I think, you know, I am a Second Amendment guy. And I think when you have an area that people assume that they may have, you know, protection, people are less likely to do dumb things. And we don't really tolerate that much. You know, we don't see the massive, you know, thefts of targets in the district. You know, the target near where I live in Sacramento, near where my apartment is in Sacramento, you know, they just completely locked up everything a few months ago. And it's an absolute pain. And I don't think the 9th Assembly District and, you know, the folks that live there want that. And I feel like we're a lot better at self-policing, and just how we raise our kids and, you know, just kind of a more, you know, rural upbringing. I don't know. It is just different in our area. The Valley is different than the Bay Area and some of our LA friends. So. Mm-hmm.
You know, well, we've got to a wide variety of issues, talking about water, fire, fentanyl, crime, and a variety of different things. You know, we've got a couple minutes left on this weekend show. Any other topics that are kind of on your mind right now that you're keeping an eye on in Sacramento?
You know, there's always certain things that we're, you know, dealing with. I would just say, you know, probably crime is going to be the next thing. You know, there's a lot of bills coming over from the Senate that are concerning. You know, that kind of continue to reduce sentencing enhancements. There's a lot of bills coming over from the Senate that, once again, I would say deteriorate parental control, parental rights over their kids, you know, allowing the state to kind of take over some of those obligations. And I'm very concerned about some of that. So there's a lot to be concerned about, which is why it's important that our constituents stay engaged. And we continue to elect good people that will continue to fight, but also understand, like Republicans, you know, we're in the super minority. There's 18 Republicans in the Assembly. And so we have to, even if there is a good Democrat, a good conservative Valley Democrat, that, you know, we can have our people engage in those races. I think that's important, because part of my job is to work with the Mod Dems, you know, and try to figure out a way to count to 41 to either pass or stop a piece of legislation. And good quality, you know, Valley Democrats like Carlos, like, you know, former member Adam Gray, right? Those are great, great assets to us. And then one other thing I'll just touch on, you know, there, I am a co-chair with, so there's a caucus called the Problem Solvers Caucus. It's based after Washington, D.C., but it's bicameral, bipartisan. So there's two co-chairs, Senator Wilk and Senator Josh Newman out of the Senate, and then Senator Carlos Villapudua and myself out of the Assembly. And then there's 21 of us that all work together in a very bipartisan way. And it's really, really exciting that we're kind of putting together this group that doesn't want to focus on, you know, the politics, but just the policy and really moving good policy forward. So I'm super excited about that. And you know, our job as elected is to work for our constituents. That is who I represent, and I can represent that in a much better way if I'm collegial, and the problem solvers is certainly a way to get that done.
Well, Assemblyman Flora, we appreciate your time for coming on the show, and thank you for getting us up to speed on everything at Sacramento.
No, appreciate the time, and feel free to call. And honestly, for everybody that's listening, you know, my job is to represent you. And so if you have issues with a state agency or DMV or whatever it may be, please reach out to my district office or my capital office, and my job is to serve you. So please use this as a resource.
Well, we thank Assemblyman Heath Flora for joining us on this weekend's Motherload Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We'll see you back next week for more Motherload Views.
You've been listening to Motherload Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherload. Motherload Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.